I have always loved the story of the boy Samuel, always. I remember learning it as a child and being completely amazed that this boy, this kid my age, could have such a special relationship with God. And I remember thinking, if this could happen to Samuel, why not me? Why not my brothers and sisters? Why not Amy Duncan or Ricky McDonald or Kristen Klein or Kevin Gentry or any of the other kids I grew up with at my church? Well, you know, Ricky and Kevin might be special cases, but why not? Why not any of us? What a great lesson to learn. I am so thankful for the church of my childhood that taught me how real God is, not just in Bible times, but still today. My earliest faith encounters taught me to entertain the possibility that God is alive and moving and acting all over the place. God spoke and speaks and will continue to speak in every age and every circumstance. God speaks in the night. God speaks at the break of dawn and every moment in between. God began speaking in Samuel's life even before he was born. Do you know the story of his birth? It's a good one. It happens just before this. Samuel's mother, Hannah, could not conceive. And it absolutely tore her apart. Months went by, years, and she endured disappointment after disappointment. It was devastating for her. Eventually, she got to the point where she completely lost her appetite, and she cried all the time. Her husband, who loved her with a romantic love that we don't often get to see in Bible stories, he was beside himself. He wanted to do something to help, and he just couldn't. He wanted to make things better for her, but there was no way he could. "Oh, Hannah," he said, "why do you weep? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart sad?" And then this adorable line, "Am I not more to you than 10 sons? And for Hannah, in her grief, the answer was no. Because for her, the emptiness she felt could not even be filled by her husband's tender love. So she goes up to the sanctuary at Shiloh to pray about this. "Look upon me, Lord, remember me, take pity on me. Bless me with a child, bless me with a son. If you will give him to me," she says, "I will return him back to you so that he can serve in your sanctuary for all time." She was praying this to herself, but her lips were moving. Now, Eli the priest, the same Eli that shows up in the story that Minta read, Eli the priest had been watching her. And ever one to miss the signs of God's presence, like he does in today's story with the boy Samuel, Eli goes up to Hannah and he says, "How long are you going to make a drunken spectacle of yourself, woman? Put away your wine and get out of here." I'm so stubborn that I probably would have rolled my eyes and snorted a little snort and said, "You have no idea what you're talking about, old man." And then he really would have kicked me out of the temple. But Hannah was far more polite than I would have been. And Hannah says, "Oh, my Lord, I am not drunk." She goes on to tell him of her anguish. And he then sends her home with this blessing. "Go in peace. May the God of Israel grant the petition that you have made to him." So in due time, a son is born, and he is named Samuel. And Hannah keeps her promise. When he is old enough, she brings him to the temple at Shiloh and dedicates him to God's service. So Samuel grows up there, under the care of Eli, serving at the sanctuary at Shiloh. This is where we find him at the start of today's story. Eli, who by now is a very old man, sets Samuel up at nights on a pallet near the Ark of the Covenant, near the altar. And Samuel's job is to tend to the lamp to make sure that it has enough oil to go through the night. Every night, Eli goes to his own room to get a good night's sleep. And every night, Samuel is there at the ready to keep the light on for you, as they might say at Motel 6. On this night, Samuel has just drifted off to sleep when he hears his name. "Samuel, Samuel." "Here I am," he mumbles in a sleepy daze as he runs to Eli's bedside. "Here I am, for you called me," he says again. "I did not call you. Go back and lie down." So Samuel settles back down and drifts off again, and again he hears, "Samuel, Samuel." He runs to Eli, "Here I am, for you called me." Grumpy now, Eli says, "I did not call you. Go to sleep." Really confused, and probably even a little wounded and upset, Samuel was young. He was a small boy. He does as he's told. But a third time he hears, "Samuel, Samuel." He doesn't know what else to do. He gets up and runs to Eli. "Here I am." And only now does Eli get it. "Oh, it must be the Lord calling you," he finally figures out. "Go back, lie down, and when you hear your name again, say, 'Speak, Lord. Your servant is listening.'" When the story starts out, we are told that the word of the Lord was rare in those days, and I get it. The people are not in the Garden of Eden anymore, where God is as near as the next touch, where God walks through at the time of the evening breeze, and the people are not traveling across the desert anymore to Canaan's side with Abraham and Sarah, where God speaks in the night of stars and sand and blessings. The people are not at the burning bush or at the shores of the Red Sea or on Mount Sinai, where God's presence was there in a tangible way. The people of Samuel's day are settled. They are safe and secure from all alarms, or at least most of them anyway. They are complacent. They are distracted. And their eyes, like Eli's, have grown dim to the reality of God in their midst. I get it. I understand. It happens. But Eli? Eli should have known better. Eli has no excuse. This man who has given his life in service to God should have known what was happening. Instead of judging, "Stop making a spectacle of yourself, woman," or dismissing, "Go back and lie down, boy," Eli should have spent his days proclaiming, "Why not? Why not entertain the possibility that God is alive and moving and acting all over the place?" But instead, Eli let his eyes grow dim. What about our eyes? Have they grown dim? Do we assume that the word of the Lord is rare in our day? I'm afraid we do. I'm afraid we treat the Bible like a memory box or a scrapbook, and we take each thing out, and we hold up each picture, and we say in past tense, "Oh, right, remember when?" Or, "Oh, I loved it when God did that." Like the people of Samuel's day, we are complacent. And heaven knows we are distracted. I get it. I understand. I've been there many times myself. But I also know, that our God is a living God who moves and acts and speaks all over the place. God speaks in big moments, and God speaks in the little things. God speaks with a roar, and God speaks with a still small voice. God speaks at the break of dawn through every moment of every day, and God speaks in the dark of night, maybe especially in the dark of night. For this is how God has worked since the beginning of time, when God speaks the world into being in spite of the darkness. "Let there be light," God says, and there is light. Have you ever noticed how one candle, just one candle, can make all the difference in a dark room? It's amazing to me, little miracle. Even in a big room like this, when it's dark outside and all the lights are off, even in here, the glow of just one candle can create this circle of warm light. And like we saw on Christmas Eve, when you put 250 plus candles together, this place blazes with glory. One candle, one light, makes all the difference. One candle, one light makes a difference in the nights. One candle, when the power goes out, is the difference between stumbling around and walking down the stairs in one piece. One candle on a table turns an ordinary dinner into a special occasion. One candle burning on a windowsill says, "Welcome home." One candle lit on All Saints Sunday whispers, "I remember you. I miss you." Never underestimate the power of one light to rise in the night and transform it. Samuel goes back to bed a fourth time, and when God calls to him again, he's ready. Or at least he thinks he's ready. "Speak, Lord. Your servant is listening," he says, just like Eli told him to. But Samuel is not ready for what God has to say. It is a doozy. "I'm about to do something," God says, "in Israel that will make both ears of anyone who hears of it tingle." Oh, dear. You couldn't blame for Samuel thinking, uh-oh, what am I in for? God goes on. "On that day, I will fulfill against Eli." Against Eli? Oh, no. "All that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end," from beginning to end, how bad can this be, Samuel wonders. It doesn't sound good. "For I have told him that I am about to punish his house forever," yikes, "for the iniquity that he knew, because his sons were blaspheming God and he did not restrain them." Earlier in 1 Samuel, we learn that Eli's sons were absolute scoundrels. That's the word the Bible uses to describe them. They were crooks. They were cheats. They were wicked men. They should have been in line to take over the chief priesthood after their father, but they did not act as priests should. Their behavior proved that they were in it only for themselves, not to serve God, not to serve the people. Here's what was going on. People would come to this tent of meeting, and they would bring their offerings to make sacrifices. Now, it was customary for priests to receive a portion of those sacrifices so that they would have something to eat. This is just how the system worked. But Eli's sons abused their power. They insisted on taking the choicest cuts of meat for themselves even before the sacrifice was offered. And not only that, they insisted on taking the choicest of the choice cuts. In fact, the ones that were specifically meant for God. This is what they were doing, taking from the people and from God. One time, a lowly assistant, tried to stand up to them. "Wait, let's burn off the fat first, like we're told to do in the Bible, and then you can take what is yours." But Eli's sons threatened violence. "You must hand it over now," they said to the assistant, "and if you don't, we will take it by force." What kind of holy men behave like this? Eli's sons were not worthy of the title they bore, priest. And the worst part of it was that Eli knew all about it and did nothing to stop it. "Speak, Lord, your servant is listening," Samuel says in the night. And God's response is terrifying to him. "I am about to punish Eli and his house forever." Now Samuel is awake. He won't sleep the rest of the night, for he knows that in the morning everything will change. He will have to speak this prophetic, challenging word. He will have to tell Eli, his mentor, his caretaker, his father figure, that God's judgment is coming, and it is coming for him hard and fast. Can you imagine knowing that he has to say this when dawn breaks? What a heavy word to lay on such tiny shoulders. So when morning finally comes, Samuel doesn't want any part of it. He hops up right away, and he busies himself with the tasks that he normally does in the morning, trying to distract himself from what he knows he must do. Eli saunters in. "So, what did God say?" he says. Samuel pauses and he stutters and he probably blushes and he tries to hide his face. And Eli gets a little worried. Don't hide it from me, Samuel. Go ahead. What did God say? It is not an easy thing to speak the words of God. For in spite of what our modern saccharinized greeting card style Christianity might have us think, most words from God are downright challenging. Let my people go! Can you imagine being the one given that word to speak in front of Pharaoh? Or, prepare the way of the Lord! Or, you brood of vipers! Which I still can't get over. I don't think I would ever say that to you. You have hearts of stone, the prophets were told to say. And let me tell you, they had guts. Do justice. Love kindness. Walk humbly. Bless those who curse you. Turn the other cheek. Go. Speak. Repent. Forgive. These are heavy words placed on the shoulders of the people of God. They are scary words, because most of the time they are not welcome words. The right thing to say, the godly thing to say, is almost never the popular thing to say. And yet still the call comes. Go, speak. It rises in the night, and it challenges us to rise to the occasion. Samuel got up that morning and surely wished it had all been a dream. But it wasn't a dream, and he knew it. It was a call. It was a call to speak the truth to power. It was a call to rise in the night and a call to let his one little light shine through the darkness, that darkness created by Eli's sons and Eli's own cowardice. So even though Samuel's knees were shaking, and even though his voice was quaking, Samuel did it. He's not that different from us, you know. Like I learned as a child, Samuel is not that different from us. God knows the darkness in the world today is profound. It is pervasive. And God calls us to speak into that darkness, patiently, persistently, pleadingly. God calls us. Rise, God says. Rise, people. Speak. Shine. One light makes all the difference. Oh, let us make a difference.